I'm Johnny Garrett, and you're listening to the Good Beer Hunting Podcast. I'm not really sure how to introduce Camra. On the one hand, it's the biggest consumer interest group in the UK, the saviour of British brewing that is as responsible for our amazing beer scene as any American influence. But on the other hand, it's portrayed as an irrelevant, lumbering beast that seems to stagger from controversy to controversy. The Campaign for Real Ale, or Camra as it's now known, was founded in 1971 in response to a surge in pasteurised, force-carbonated keg beer that was pushing traditional cask ale off the bars. Alarmed by the lack of diversity, four men in a pub decided that someone needed to champion the traditional method of delivering unconditioned beer to pubs and serving them at the exact moment they peaked, without any extra gas. Since then, the organisation has grown to nearly 200,000 members, lobbying the government, running festivals, producing magazines, and promoting their self-defined real ale above all other formats. Its success in protecting an inefficient product from capitalist pressures is unprecedented. But since the UK craft beer revolution, Camra has struggled to find its place in a fast-moving and often image-led scene. Suddenly, most of the brewing and talking was being done by young, American-inspired brewers who loved keg beer, big hops, and high ABVs. The keg lines that had been loaded with crap Euro lagers were suddenly pouring exciting, experimental beers that appealed to young drinkers more than historic real ale did. Caught looking the other way and trying to catch up, Camra has come under pressure to realign its objectives in support of good keg beer, as well as to update older breweries' outdated marketing and pick a side on issues that simply weren't there when the charter was drawn up, all while coping with the fact that after years of growth, cask beer had gone back into decline. I sat down with the new chief executive, Tom Stainer, who might be seen as a reformer, but has had to keep a level head in his new role. We talk about the challenges of running an organisation controlled by some 200,000 members, propped up by volunteers and considered out of touch, when they were the people who made it all possible. This is Tom Stainer, Chief Executive of the Campaign for Real Ale. Listen in. So we're just off the back of a two-hour beer judging extravaganza. So apologies if anyone slurs, but hopefully we've still got our wits about us. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Tom.
Not a problem. It's the ideal time to conduct an interview, I think.
I think it probably is. Depends what we're going for. how was the SIBA judging for you?
It's always really exciting, actually, because there's such a wide range of interesting beers to try, and across all the dispensers as well. I think what's really interesting for me is actually that I deliberately chose the two keg tables, actually, to taste, because it's interesting to find out what's going on, and maybe something that Camra is traditionally not meant to be interested in. And to see that there's perhaps a bit of a myth in that idea that every keg beer is high quality and comes out tasting perfect, because I think we found on our tables that that's not always the case. So it goes to show that actually you can't be lazy about beer. You've got to look after it. You've got to treat it well and make sure it's served in perfect condition.
Yeah, much the same as cask, you can have the same pitfalls.
You can still screw up a great beer by not serving it right.
Yeah. So what were the styles that you were having in the keg?
So the first table I was on today was specialty keg. So we had a massive range of really interesting stuff. So we had
two palettes. Screwed.
we had cherry. We had coffees. We had vanilla. We had a coffee beer so thick that you probably could have actually got out of the glass with a fork. It shows the massive range of stuff that people are trying and the experimental things that people are trying as well. Yeah.
And did anything really work? Or
the cherry beer. Although we got a lot of insulting comments from nearby tables when it was served to us, because it was bright pink. Smelt fantastic, tasted delicious, and actually really changed our mind about things. It was like, yeah, I'd happily order another one of these. Some of the coffees worked really well, some delivered a lot on aroma, and I want to get into this, and then were really disappointing when you tasted them. But you quite often get that with specialities. You know, chocolates, they smell like dairy milk in a glass, and you taste them and you think, hang on, I've been deceived here. The specialties is always interesting. And then the second table I was on was pale ales. Again, it was kegs. And some interesting ones there, some unfined ones, some fined ones. Some, again, massively hot forward, some not quite getting the balance right for me. But again, it shows there's so much innovation going on out there.
Yeah, and so much variation just within what could be perceived to be quite a small subsection, just pale ale, but it's expanded out and... I was on the session IPAs, and there was a whole range of flavours that you wouldn't expect, from blackcurrant to mango to all kinds of different things.
Yeah, because usually when you end up on a session IPA, your heart sinks a bit because you think, I'm just going to get 10 things that
identical piney, citrusy things. Yeah. And what's the sort of the range of the SIBA, so the Society of Independent Brewers competition, compared to the Camera one, which is all cask and happens in throughout the year, and then the finals towards August?
Yeah, I think they're two very different competitions. Camera's, as you say, runs throughout the year. It involves a lot of our members at a local level, so it's a long process in terms of beers are chosen first locally. They get up to regional competitions. Eventually, they end up as part of the National Champion Beer Britain competition. SIBA do match that to a certain extent. They obviously have their regional heats. As you say, we don't have the same range of dispense that SIBA do, so we're looking mainly at the cask conditioned beers and also bottle conditioned beers. It would be interesting to see, because we started to accredit some cans as real ale, so more in Bristol being the first one that we've given that accreditation to. I really hope they're not the first and the last to be accredited as a real ale in a can. So we're slowly widening what we're doing, but yeah, we're mainly concentrating on the cask beers, unlike SIBA, who are looking at lots of different dispenses. I think maybe the categories are slightly different. I think the judges are slightly different. We tend to focus more on non-industry judges, I guess. Well, I think today, certainly looking around the tables, there's quite a lot of people I recognise from the industry. Yeah. And SIBA, I think, very rightly also focus on commerciality. One of the things they ask is, do you think this is a commercial product? Do you want to sell?
The saleability, which is something I've seen in the judging that I've done.
Yeah, it's not something we ask as a consumer organisation, but I think for SIBA, it's absolutely important that a beer could be fantastic. It can really excite you. You go, this is great. And someone goes, do you want another one? You go, no. Because it's either too in your face or it's killed your taste buds for the rest of the day. So for an organisation like SIBA and their members, they need to bear in mind what they're doing has to be commercial. It's not just for the fun of it. A lot of them do it for the fun of it, of course. But
although there is a commerciality in a £300 keg. You sell one of them.
If you can, of course.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your background. You're a journalist first before getting to Camera.
That's right. And I started off as a very traditional journalist on local press in the UK. I did that for a few years. I went away and did some travelling. I came back and someone made me this ridiculous offer when they said, there's this paper called The Morning Advertiser. It's about the pub trade. It's about the drinks trade. They will pay you to write about pubs and beer. And I couldn't believe that this was a job that was out there. And that was probably getting on towards 20 years ago now. So I did that for a few years. I went up to Scotland. I eventually edited a magazine called Morning Advertiser Scotland. From that, I then ended up working for Camera. I came on board to edit What's Brewing, which is the newspaper we send out to all our members. I launched Beer Magazine, which is a sort of, I say glossier, but actually we deliberately had it on nice matte, sort of, you know, sustainable paper. Because I saw an opportunity to talk about beer in a way that wasn't as militant as maybe the Camera newspaper had been in the past. I wasn't the first to recognise this, that actually there's a lot of people out there who just enjoy beer as part of their lifestyle. They don't need to necessarily campaign with a capital C about it. And beer was very much aimed to do that soft campaigning about beer and about pubs.
Sort of support it where you can, for real.
Just celebrating how enjoyable beer and pubs are. And that's what we aim to do. And that has gone pretty well. I've been at Camera for almost 11, 12 years now. As Camera's evolved, my role has evolved. I've been Chief of Communications, I've been Chief of Communications and Campaigns. And in January, I started as Chief Executive of the organisation.
So I realise I'm straying into territory of guessing ages, but you must have been one of the youngest people sort of in HQ when you joined.
I'm not sure I was the youngest. I'd have liked to feel I was one of the youngest. But yeah, I was in my 30s when I joined Camera. But actually, Camera's professional paid staff have often been quite young. A previous chief exec, Mike Benner, now running SIBA, was I think probably in his 30s when he took over as chief exec.
Right.
So I think our staff have always been quite young, even though maybe the incorrect stereotype of Camera has been it's an older demographic. The staff and a lot of the active members within the organisation are, as you'd expect, sort of, middle-aged to late middle-aged. And we're not the old pensioners drinking club that we've been accused of fairly recently.
Yeah, quite recently, yeah. Yes. So, on that, you have the demographics of your members fairly well wrapped up, I'd imagine. How true is that cliche? And more importantly, how true to that cliche do those members act?
I think our average age of our members is probably in middle age, as you'd expect. I think that's maybe the result of many factors, including the fact that people come to joining organisations late in life. I think as a 20-something person, you find different ways to express yourself, and it's not necessarily joining a particular single-issue organisation. There are many other ways you can express your activism, online particularly. I think we have almost 200,000 members now, and I'm sure if you think of any particular stereotype, you could probably find one or two people within the organisation that match that stereotype. We're broadly representative of the population. So there will be older people, there'll be older people with certain values, there'll be younger people, there'll be younger people with certain values. Quite often what shouldn't surprise me, it does, is that actually the pensioners, the retired people in our organisation, are the ones pushing for change, are pushing for inclusivity and diversity. And I think one of the unfairest things people assume is because you're old and retired, you're not going to be actually pushing for those things. You're going to have old-fashioned values. And equally, you can find examples of young members in Camera who express old-fashioned values of the sort that we are sometimes criticised for.
Mm. And so do Camera want to change that cliché? I mean, lots of people have said that, you know, Camera needs to change its aims. It needs to, you know, maybe Cask Beer doesn't need protecting or has won the battle, and you guys should be championing other good beer now. Is that a valid criticism?
I think it is a valid criticism, and it's one that comes from many of our members. I think any organisation that doesn't accept that it needs to look at what it's doing and think about, are we doing this in the right way? Are we getting left behind? Is going to find itself come against problems. I think the counter to that is actually you can try to change too much, too fast, and go with every trend that's going. And that's equally dangerous. It's interesting, one of the guys at my table this afternoon is a very engaged young guy. He's worked in pubs. He's now involved in the industry. And I made an assumption about him. I said, oh, because you've seen the industry, because you know Real Ale and Keg and Dispense and all the interesting beers out there, you've probably seen that the battle's been won. Why would I join Camera? And he turned around and said, you're completely wrong. I think Camera needs to exist. I think Camera's doing an important thing, because if we stop concentrating on it, cask beer is in danger of disappearing. And there is something special about cask beer that I, as a young person, this is him speaking, said, I believe there's something special about cask beer and we need to protect it, because it's a style which is quite unique. And when a pub gets it right, when a brewery gets it right, it is very special. And he would have been very sorry to see cask beer vanish because keg beer had come in. And that really surprised me, because that's a view that we feel young people don't have. We think they're very dispense agnostic. They just want good beer and they don't really mind whether it's keg or cask or bottle or can, but actually it mattered to him, and that was really interesting to me.
Do you think that he's right? Do you think that if Camera took their eye off the ball, or if beer in general did, cask beer would start to disappear?
I think there's a lot of reasons why cask beer is viewed as more difficult than other dispenses. There's more things that can go wrong with it. You have to concentrate on it more. And historically, we have a real problem with cask beer in that it is devalued on the bar. And it's devalued by consumers. They have learned to accept or expect that cask beer will be one of the cheaper products on the bar. The real success story of craft beer has been that actually it has established a price point based on its value, its added value. So people don't blink when it's £5-6 a pint because it's special.
Blink, but we still cough up.
We still cough up. But you accept that there is something about it which gives it that added value.
Yeah.
The problem with cask is people haven't linked it to the intrinsic value of it. So, you know, cask beer, even more so than craft, is a product which is crafted by people in breweries. It's looked after well in the cellar. If you get a really good pint of cask beer in a pub, something special has happened all the way down that supply chain, and it's not guaranteed, which is why it makes it such a special occasion and why it makes such a disappointment when it doesn't happen. But until we can find some way of actually valuing cask beer properly, it's going to be very difficult to convince retailers that why should I go to all the trouble of looking after a cask beer in my cellar, risking the wastage if we get it wrong, risking the fact people want to buy it, risking the fact that it's only got a short cellar life compared to this other product, which is incredibly popular at the moment, is generating its own marketing. We can attach a higher price point to it and therefore make a bigger margin on it. It's very difficult to talk to retailers and say to them, you should be stocking cask.
So it's an aim for Camera to try and engage with pubs and with consumers to say, you know, look, this is a premium product that takes a lot of care to make. But at the same time, you offer discounts with memberships. Is that hard to kind of reconcile while you're making those messages?
I think as a membership organisation, you need to give certain types of people the right reason to join. And some people join Camera just because they believe in the cause. Some people join Camera because they want to learn more about things. Some people, of course, will join Camera because they like the social aspect of it, the fact they get to meet people with similar interests. Some people join Camera because they get something for them. And whether that's a nice magazine, a newspaper, whether they get some money off their pint, that's what motivates them. And the thing with the discounts is it's not saying beer should be a certain low price. It's saying whatever price you're charging for your beer, as a Camera member, we will give you a reward. And we get criticised for it. Yes, I get that. But any business will consider whether offering some sort of incentive to customers is worth their while or not. And even going outside the pub business, people offer sales, offer discounts, certain things, and they price that up and they say, if it brings in more customers, I will then make more profit. So, you know, we're not about forcing pubs to give discounts. If pubs feel it would help their business, we're happy to tell our members about it. Mm. And what we certainly don't want to ever see is this entitlement culture that thankfully a few members in Camera have, where they say, I'm a Camera member, therefore you must give me a discount, and they wave their card in the air. And yeah, that shouldn't happen. We say it shouldn't happen. If you're doing it as a member, you shouldn't be doing it, because that's not what Camera is about. Mm. It's about pubs saying, we'd like to offer you a discount because we'd like to get you through the door, because we think we've got something we can offer you. And if you're a Camera member, we want to say we're welcoming to you, in the same way you might have discounts for other groups of the population.
And what about at the other end of the scale? There's a lot of producers of cask who are producing very, very cheap cask beer, and that's their business model, to knock out firkins at 50 quid. Sometimes offering, you know, buy three, get one free kind of offers. Is that, do you speak to those brewers and go, actually, wouldn't it be better if we, well, I mean, it comes close to price fixing, but trying to agree a premium place for cask on the bar?
This is a really tricky one. You sort of asked this in your previous question as well. And I talk to a lot of people in the industry who see this as a problem, and there's no real good solution to it at the moment. You know, you talk to people at the Caskmark and Cask Report and CEBA and all over the place, and they're seeing this issue. If businesses are sustainable and able to offer that price, well, then that's a business decision. Mm. If they're undercutting other businesses and they're doing it in a way that means it's not actually sustainable long term, that becomes more difficult. But it should be, from a consumer point of view anyway, it's less the price you're paying per barrel of beer, it's what you can charge across the bar that people are prepared to pay. And I think whatever pubs are paying wholesale for beer, the problem lies with the fact that customers are just, they're seeing real ale, cask conditioned beer, as not being an expensive product. And they're seeing craft beer as something that, like you say, you might blink, but you'll still pay it because the story has been told about craft beer in the right way, and it doesn't have the historical baggage that maybe cask beer does, in terms of it's a people's drink, it's, you know, the thing you have at working men's clubs, it's the working man's drink that was there to be affordable and you drank large quantities of it after your shift. Mm. And it's trying to get away from that background of cask, which is problematic for many in the industry.
So we've talked about how, you know, if it's a legitimate business proposition to produce a £50 firkin, then you can't really argue against that. That's a business model and it's working. Another issue, and I think it's a big barrier of entry for a lot of people, is the slight lottery you can have with cask. And I know we've talked about how you can have it with keg as well. But I think cask quality has been a huge issue. And I'm not aware of Camera really campaigning on that side or trying to encourage education or that kind of thing. Does Camera have an intention to help out at the point of serve?
I've realised that nodding on a podcast doesn't work, but I've been nodding throughout that question. Quality is key for cask ale more than anything, because it can go horribly wrong. And if someone is trying cask for the first time and gets a bad pint, and we always, you know, we all have our experience of bad pints, they may never go back to it. If someone who knows cask beer has a bad pint, I find, unfairly, they tend to blame the brewery rather than the pub. Hmm. So they might say, I'm never going to drink from X brewery again, but they'll still go back into the Red Lion
yep.
next week. So it's the reputation of breweries at stake, but also it's cask beer as a sector which is affected by this. And it's something we know is really important, something we have been doing stuff on. We've been working with other people in the industry. The reason we work with other people in the industry is quite difficult as consumers to be telling professional publicans or even brewers how they should be doing things, because they tend to get a little bit offended by that. And I don't think it's right for us to be saying we know better how you should be doing things. But we encourage quality. So we work with Caskmark, we work on the Cask Report. We obviously give awards out to good beers and pubs and breweries to recognise the best of people out there helping quality. So we've talked about education, learning and discovery. And I think one of the really important things we can do as a consumer organisation is teach consumers to be more aware of when there's problems in beer, because that will empower them to actually assert their consumer right to say to a publican, this beer isn't right. Because I think a lot of people, they get a bad beer and they either, and this is horrible to watch when it happens, sit there and just drink their way through.
I've been guilty of that. It's the British, the quiet, stiff upper lip guy in me.
I've seen my father-in-law do it, and I've had the same pint as him, and I've taken it back, and he sat there and carried on drinking, though I've taken it back. So if consumers can, you know, we can do a lot in the industry to raise quality, and pub companies are doing this, and breweries are doing this, and managed chains are trying to raise quality through training and things like that, and that's great. But it's consumer power, because if consumers start saying, I'm not going to frequent that pub because they can't get their beer properly or they can't serve beer properly, if they bring pints back and say there's something wrong with this, and they have the confidence to say, I know there's something wrong with this because it's tasting off, rather than at the moment I think a lot of consumers are a bit scared of doing that because they don't have the knowledge or the language to describe why they don't quite like it, or unfortunately they just think it's meant to be like that. So if at the very least we can teach people beer should not ever taste like that, that would be great. So that's power we have as a consumer organisation, is that we can actually empower consumers to complain when they don't get something right in a pub. And when they're paying quite a lot for a pint, they should be empowered to do that. Mm-hmm. And in other circumstances, they would be. But too often people don't realise that no, beer shouldn't taste like that, and actually I can do something about it.
So you'd encourage people to go to the pub, the person behind the bar, and say it, and you intend to give them the tools to do that.
Yeah, I certainly think by our Learn Discovery program, we should be able to give people, starting with basic knowledge about what makes good and bad beer, what goes into beer, what flavours you should be having in beer, what you shouldn't have in beer, and if you do have a certain flavour, why it might be there. Mm. That will help. And then, you know, again, it's a member benefit. We can offer them more advanced education. We can point them in the direction of other people in the industry. We can give them advanced education. We can get resource from other people in the industry and give the consumers, so we can start funneling information from the industry to consumers through our channels. So there's various ways we can help this, and I think it will really help, because the worst thing in the world is a bad pint of cask beer particularly, but it does happen with keg as well, where people just think, oh, this is what it's meant to be like, therefore I'm never going to go near this again, and I'm going to go back to that thing I know is safe. It's bland, but it's safe, and it's a certain level of quality, and it's the chain restaurant that I go to because I know I'll get a certain level.
Yeah.
GBH is underwritten in part by New Belgium Brewing, an employee-owned craft brewery with the oldest continuous sour culture in America. With New Belgium, we're bringing you a new series of stories called Into the Wild. Wild and sour ale in America is a story all its own, and we're still in those early foundational chapters. These are stories about how these beers challenge and inspire the brewers and drinkers who seek them out. GBH is also underwritten by Guinness, who we're collaborating with in a new series called Mother of Invention. Stories devoted to illuminating innovation in the brewing world that impacts the beer in your hand in unexpected ways. Guinness just officially opened their first purpose-built brewery in the U.S., out in Baltimore County, where they have a 2 and 10 barrel system that makes a wide spectrum of contemporary styles served in the taproom only. And they have a 100 hectoliter system, where they're scaling up some of their latest recipes for national distribution in the U.S., like the recently reinvented Blonde Ale and American Style IPA. You should visit, have a seat in their epic beer garden, and tour the historic distillery site, the first legal distillery after Prohibition in Maryland, right off historic Route 1. And of course, we're also supported by The Fervent Few, a growing community of hundreds of GBH readers, including some professional supporters. From the UK, we have Cloudwater Brew Co., Four Pure Brewing Company, Magic Rock Brewing, Honest Brew, Two Tribes Brewing, Beerhawk, Northern Monk Brew Co., The Five Points Brewing Company, London Fields Brewery, Verdant Brewing Company, and Boundary Brewing in Belfast. In the US, we have the Mitten Bar in Ludington, Michigan, Lord Hobo in Massachusetts, 1911 Established Cider and Spirits from New York, Hops and Grain in Texas, Tilted Barn Brewery in Exeter, Rhode Island, Proclamation Ale in Warwick, Rhode Island, Old Nation Brewing in Williamston, Michigan, National Craft Beer Retailer, Craft Beer Cellar, and Daredevil Brewing in Indianapolis. And then there's Devil's Peak of Signal Hill Products in Cape Town, South Africa, and Stone and Wood Brewing Company along the far eastern shore of Australia, all supporting us through their monthly pro-tier subscriptions. You can join the Fervent Few by visiting goodbeerhunting.com/ferventfew.
So, yeah, there's an issue there that maybe cask is undervalued, you know, literally and metaphorically sometimes. But yet cask volumes are back in decline. Is that correct?
Yes, and it depends who you speak to. It's not great at the moment. We've seen a period of slight growth. We've seen a period of it plateauing off, and it looks like it's in decline again.
Mm. Do you think it sort of rode on the craft coattails, and now, you know, the way that craft has developed, it's gone experimental, hyper-local. It's starting to interfere with cask rather than ride along with it.
It's really difficult to tell. It's really difficult to tell because it could be, it rode on the coattails, it could be actually it was adversely affected by, in that drinking habits were shifted across to craft. And if,
so I should say keg rather than craft. I've got caught in my own thing there.
Yes. Yeah, thankfully we've not got bogged down by definitions of things. I think we know we understand what we're talking about, and hopefully other people will. Yet for people who are fairly dispense agnostic, it is, they're going to shift their drinking to just beers that they like, beers that interest them for whatever reason. And it might just be that the keg end of that craft market is more appealing to the new generation of drinkers than the cask end. There have been accusations that maybe some of the more traditional cask brewers have not been quick enough to respond to trends, or they've not been delivering the sort of beers, or even they just don't market themselves, or they're, that's maybe a bit unfair, that they're not able to market themselves in quite the same way as you know, smaller, more agile brewers who can get away with a lot more in terms of the way they market and how they talk about things. And it's always an advantage if you're able to kick against the establishment as a young brand, because that gives you a point of difference and you can be seen as the upstart and you can be seen as the exciting part of the industry as opposed to the very traditional mainstream. And in any industry, you can see this happening. It's not just beer. It's in everything from, you know, sort of Virgin in the airline industry to Innocent Smoothies to all sorts of things. You know, it's a great way of getting a lot of noise generated without much resource. Mm.
But there are some bigger and medium and even small cask brewers who have adapted pretty well. So on the bigger side, you've got St. Austell, who have a fantastic experimental range, and then smaller guys like maybe Abbey Dale and those kind of guys who are adapting. Is that what, you know, more traditional cask brewers should be looking at as a model? Is that going to help?
It's a really difficult question because they know their customer base best, and obviously they run their business, and it's not our place to tell them how to run their business. There is definitely a place, and again, talking to some people at the judging today, where people surprise you. They say, actually, you know what I like? My first beer, I just want something that's unchallenging and it's balanced and it's not massively hoppy and it's just a nice sessionable beer. That's what I choose. Which kind of seems to go against the trend that we are seeing in the industry at the moment, which everything has to be exciting and challenging and full of hops and, you know, just incredible bitterness units. So there clearly is still a place, and there's still lots of different types of drinkers, and people have personal tastes, and there's still a large number of drinks out there who just want a nice sessionable bitter. And sometimes it can seem like the beer bubble is being a little bit patronising to say, well, that's bland and brown and boring because you're not drinking this very exciting thing over here. So if breweries feel there is a market for their product in their range for something like that, great, because I'm sure there are still drinks out there who enjoy that. And equally, if brewers think, well, you know, as our strategy, we're going to move somewhere else and go and do something more exciting because we see there's drinkers over here, great again. And what we want to see is vibrant breweries that are surviving and they're sustainable and the product they're producing is actually selling, and, you know, that they're not going to be threatened with closure.
And you don't sort of worry that by saying that breweries know their market best, they're going to, you know, try to maintain a market share of what's a shrinking market at the moment in cask.
It may be some of them, and again, it's maybe a bit patronising for us as not running breweries to think we can guess better than they can. Mm. I think in some cases people will get their strategy wrong. They may be fearful of change. We all are at the end of the day. You know, Camera has been accused of this. Brewers have been accused of this, of not seeing the trends, of not changing fast enough, of not responding to trends. They may feel if they stick the course, they'll be okay. Time will tell. It's quite easy now to say what the right thing to do is for people. And with hindsight, in 5-10 years, we'll be able to look back and say, you should have done that, or you should have done this. I think people just have to look at what they're doing, look at their market, look at the sort of pubs they're supplying, set their strategy for what they want to do, and try to make the best of it. Because there's a lot of competition out there for breweries. There's, you know, 1,700 breweries, I think, is probably the lower end of the estimate for breweries in the UK. A lot of competition out there. They're all competing for the same accounts. And like any business, you've got to find a way of finding a niche or finding a way of making your product work.
So where does the campaign for Real Ale sit in that, in the context of a declining market, potentially some conservative brewers, but also some very exciting brewers? Where, how do you represent all those guys, and how do you get cask growing again?
Really good question, how we represent that, because we are trying to represent a massive range of opinions within our membership. You know, so we've got people who are very, very keen on the small independent brewers. We've got people who are very keen on the regional family groups. You've got some people who are, as I said, very keen on the sessional beers. And to a certain extent, some people in the Camera who they want beer to still be cheap. That's why they join Camera. They want the value of Real Ale, and they will fight tooth and nail if we ever suggest that we should be paying more for beer, because that's not what they're about. So it's an incredibly difficult job to try to represent that broad spectrum of people successfully. What we're trying to do is generally look to create a good environment for beer and pubs and breweries. So the lobbying we do is about helping consumers by making sure that beer is affordable. Not that I'm saying beer should be cheap, but that actually the things that make up the cost of beer that you can influence, like tax, like business rates on pubs, are things we're lobbying on. Because if no pub's going to want to charge more than they have to, because they know that's going to drive customers away. But there's certain amounts of what they have to charge, which they have no control over. So high business rates for pubs, tax on beer. We're looking at the moment whether there can be a differential rate of tax in pubs to encourage pub going, encourage people to go into pubs, buy.
As opposed to supermarkets or bottle shops.
Yeah, absolutely. Buying cheap supermarket drink, going home, sitting in front of your TV and drinking it, because, you know, it doesn't really help the industry, certainly doesn't help the pub industry. The other thing we're lobbying on at the moment is obviously the pubs code, which is that balance between the people who own properties at pubs and the tenants that rent them off them. Because, again, we feel that if it's unbalanced, you're reducing customer choice, it's affecting the prices, it's just not leading to a vibrant industry, a vibrant pub industry. And, of course, if you have a vibrant pub industry, that gives great market access to a vibrant brewing industry. So those two are linked together. And then I think sort of the big thing that we're doing working with industry partners is just trying to talk positively about beer, to find ways we can encourage people to explore beer, to taste it for the first time. If they've tasted it for the first time, to explore it more, educate them more. We're launching a learning and discovery program, which is less about telling people what they should be drinking and more about telling people, do you know what you're drinking? Here's the things that go into it. Here's the different dispensers. We'll leave you to make your own choice about what you like. But, you know, it's just a bit more education. And hopefully that will help that appreciation of why maybe you should be paying a certain amount for beer. Because people don't question paying mill by mill wine prices, which are far in excess of beer prices. Mm. But they do have that blink moment when someone says that's going to cost you £6 for half a pint. Because they're trained not to pay that sort of money for beer, but they won't question it if it's a wine.
Going back just a little step there, you mentioned perhaps differential rates for pubs. So you put out it wasn't a statement; it was a tweet about the possible benefit that might have within Brexit, which obviously got
picked up on more for the fact that you'd mentioned Brexit in a positive light rather than the idea that you might be able to therefore separate alcohol taxes. How does Camera fit into the wider world when it comes to things like that? Because obviously it's got a very precise aim, but obviously you have to talk about incredibly controversial things to do with public health, with politics.
We went there, didn't we? We went with the B word. It can be tricky. Camera is non-political. So we do not hold a political opinion. But we obviously operate within a political sphere because we're trying to influence policymakers. So when it comes to, say, for example, a general election, and as we sit here talking, that might be sooner rather than later, but who knows. We, of course, are going to be talking to Labour Party, Liberal Party, Conservative Party. That doesn't mean we're encouraging people to vote for them, and it certainly doesn't mean we are political in the sense that we're supporting any particular stance. But if they're saying positive things about pubs, we are going to celebrate that. And if we say, in the event of Labour getting in, we would like them to do this, that in no way is suggesting we are making any statement either way about how we feel about Labour getting in. In the same way as when it came to Brexit, we're not saying anything about Brexit. We're saying if Brexit happens, and currently it looks likely, well, actually I read the paper today, so maybe not.
No one knows what's likely. That's,
if Brexit happens, we feel, having been told before that this was impossible under EU law, we feel there's ways that the government can help pubs and the brewing industry in different ways if they are not constrained by certain EU regulations. Now, by saying that, we're not supporting Brexit. We're not saying anything about the EU. We're just saying that as an organisation that's looking to campaign to the benefit of consumers drinking in pubs and breweries, this could be a good thing. I think it'd be quite foolish of an organisation to say we're not going to say anything about this and we're not going to go near this because you'd just not do any campaigning. But it does make it very tricky, because we have to walk a fine line. And the people criticising us have every right to criticise us, but I suspect most people criticising us had a very strong opinion on one side or the other of that particular issue, and the reason they were so upset about it is because we were not agreeing and we're not siding with them. But for us to say we're not going to do this because, in a way, is making us take one side or the other. And it's something we talk about a lot, and it's something we have to watch very carefully, because within our members we represent a huge spectrum of political views as well. So we can't take a political stance anywhere.
So did you, during the run-up to the Brexit vote, did you campaign or try to educate people either side around the issues that would be in cask beer?
We have avoided it largely. And I think from memory, that's about the only thing we've done which explicitly referenced Brexit. And it only referenced it in terms of, if it happens, it might be the government can do something that would help pubs, because when we've talked about preferential rates of duty or differential rates of duty in pubs previously, the excuse we've always got has been, can't do that because of EU. So what we're doing is applying pressure and saying, since you've told us that previously,
that implies that
the logical implication is, if we do leave the EU, you therefore not have your hands tied anymore. So how about it? But it's one of those issues that actually, other than those sort of specifics, there was no reason for us to get particularly involved in. And it's certainly not something that we would choose to get involved in, because, as we demonstrated, it's very problematic.
So Camera had a kind of Brexit moment itself about a year or so ago with the revitalisation, I guess, process. Can you tell us a little bit about why you thought the Camera revitalisation was needed, and how you thought that process went and what's resulted?
Yeah, our members told us it was needed. It was something which people had been speaking to us previously about. We had lots of people having fairly good-natured arguments about what are we doing on this. And as we said earlier, all organisations need to constantly review what they're doing to make sure they're not falling behind time. So our members would recognise that, and they'd said, look, you know, craft beer exists. This is happening. There's a revolution in beer, which we don't seem to be involved in. We need to talk about that. We need to talk about dispensers. We need to talk about the issues around the fact that, you know, what does the cask beer definition mean? Is it good beer versus cask beer? You know, all these quite difficult, thorny, big issues. And any organisation, any healthy organisation should be, you know, a fairly regular basis every 4, 5, 6 years, having a good look at what it does and saying, are we doing this right? So that's what revitalisation was. It was a look at our strategy, our direction, who we represent. And it was done very much in terms of going out to the membership and saying, okay, what do you want us to do? We had surveys, we had consultation meetings. I went to a lot of them, and we listened to members. And that was distilled down into these changes to our Articles of Association, which are kind of the rules that we run the campaign for. And some of them were minor changes, and some of them were quite major changes. And we got everything through bar one. I'm going to try to avoid boring you with company law here, but essentially company law says if you want to change your articles, you need 75% of your members to approve that change. Right.
So it's a high majority.
Very high bar to pass. Yeah. Very high bar to pass if you think about it. It's not just 51%, it's 75 point whatever. The only one we didn't get to pass came in about 73%, so we got pretty close on everything.
Talking Brexit margins, yeah.
Yes. And the one we didn't get through was, it was widening our representation to represent all pub goers, which, you know, was quite a change. It wasn't just...
It's huge.
Yeah, it wasn't just real ale drinkers. It was all pub goers, so it would have been all beer drinkers. So yeah, it would have been... It would have taken in anyone who's enjoying beer and using pubs. And that keys in, to be honest, with a lot of the stuff that we do as a campaign anyway, but it would have just put down on paper that fact.
Hmm.
And a lot of the other stuff that got passed is very positive. So I mentioned the Learn Discovery Programme we're planning to launch, or we're already piloting. So part of it was about talking more about camera campaigning on education rather than being dogmatic about we will tell you what to drink. It will be about we will help you work out what you like. We'll just help you understand what you're drinking. And our hope is that that will naturally take you on to some interesting things like cask beer, for example, or real cider and perry. So there was change. Like any big organisation, it's not going to happen overnight. So I think part of my job as a new chief exec is we've asked lots of questions, we've got lots of answers back, we've now got to build that into what we do. So that's one of my key aims. I think the learning and the education part is a big thing of what we have to do over the next year or so. So I think people expected the day after the vote, suddenly the logo's changed and everything completely different. It was never going to happen.
The campaign for all pubs suddenly the next day. Yeah,
it was never going to happen in an organisation like ours. But it shows that there has been an evolution. Mm. I think big organisations need to evolve rather than have a revolution, because revolution quite often break things in the process. I think it was the right thing for Cameron to do, and it happened in the right way. And, you know, I will be as interested as anyone to see what we look like in a few years' time.
Yeah. What do you think the biggest change is going to be as a result of the revitalisation?
Well, I'd really hope is a cultural change in terms of how members view different types of beers. I think the vast majority of members are very, very switched on about different types of beer. I think we still have too many of, let's call them the camera stereotypes, where people can point to them and say, that proves everything I feel bad about camera because I saw this guy doing something that I don't think is right. And sometimes they don't even know if they're a camera member.
Yeah.
Who cares? It's Twitter. They assume, yeah. It's Twitter. So why let the facts get in the way of a good story? I'd like to see that cultural change where we're seeing less and less than that. I'd like to see that cultural change where we're seeing less and less negativity about other types of beers and more positivity about why we think cask beer is special and why actually it's part of enjoying beer across a range of dispense styles.
Yeah, it's always been my kind of response when people have said that Cameron need to expand who they support. I've kind of disagreed. What I've said is they need to be better at putting themselves in the world of craft beer, of great cider, even of great wine, because it simply by its name it separates itself slightly, but it doesn't need to be like that.
No.
Both worlds support each other, and if they're in the right situation.
Yeah, and a lot of the activity we do in fact does that. So we work with Casper. With the Cask Report, we work with Cask Mark, we work with SIBA, we work with Cities of Beer. So that's all fairly agnostic in terms of dispense. That's just about promoting beer drinking, promoting pubs. So we're in that world. We just need to be probably better at communicating how we're doing that. And we need to be better at making sure that when our members go out there and represent us, which is what they're doing, they're making that clear as well.
Mm.
They're saying they're, you know, we're here to help drive pubs. You know, at the end of the day, we're a consumer organisation. We're about making sure that there is choice in pubs, that there are great pubs out there. It'd be nice if there's a real ale on just about every bar as part of that choice. But no can member should be really, in my personal opinion, going out there saying that the only thing pubs should serve is real ale, real cider and real perry. It should be part of a vibrant brewing and pub trade that's giving consumers great choice across the board.
Mm. So you mentioned that you want to make sure that your representatives are going out there and telling the right story of Camera, which is this very special cultural and food phenomenon, but it's part of a wider world. Is it incredibly hard to manage the fact that Camera sort of has an HQ and then has, I don't know, 100 regionals, and then within the regionals you've got the people organising the events, the people making the pamphlets and stuff like that, whereas... You know, it feels like a spider's web and you just, or an octopus, you don't know what one leg is doing.
There's a mix of metaphors going
on. Spiders on webs, yeah.
Spider octopuses. They sound terrible.
I think that's a horrible horror film.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is a difficult organisation to manage. And these aren't my words. These are the words of one of our national executives who says Camera's biggest strengths are our branches. And our biggest weaknesses are our branches, because there's a lot of autonomy out there. A branch, it's a positive thing, is autonomous. They run their own beer festivals, they're doing their own thing. The head office is there to support them in their campaigning. But it does mean we don't have, and we couldn't have, and I'm not sure I would want to have that level of control over those individual members where you're telling them what to say and what to do.
Because they're volunteers at the end of the day.
They're volunteers.
As well.
Yeah. They're not paid employees. They give up their time, and a lot of them give up a lot of their time to do this. So it's about that very difficult thing, which is culture management. It's by from the centre spreading out that these are our values. This is what we believe as an organisation. This is what we would like you to portray as an organisation when you're out there representing us. And I think what some members forget is if they walk into a pub and they pull out their Camera membership card, from that moment on, they're representing Camera. They could turn up on social media as being a representative of Camera. I saw a bloke in my pub waving his Camera card around saying this. And suddenly that reflects on the entire organisation. And it reflects on all their fellow volunteers who give up their time to do stuff for Camera. Because the minute we get accusations that, you know, someone says something sexist or has behaved in a very old-fashioned way, it's very easy to say, well, that applies to the entire organisation. You'll have seen them. The problem with Camera is dot, dot, dot. Yeah, and
I think I've got a T-shirt saying that.
Yeah, I probably should have. Yeah. And it's a great way of driving hits on your blog because people like clicking on it. You know, it's. But those people, I think, forget that they are representing their fellow volunteers. It's not just Camera as a national organisation. It's their branch colleagues, and it's people across the country are doing lots of hard work. So that's frustrating, in that trying to control that and manage that reputation with almost 200,000 members in 200 branches across country of volunteers is tricky. I think considering that complexity, if you look at the small number of cases which things go wrong, shows actually that the vast, vast majority of Camera members are very switched on, and they're just ordinary people. I lose track of the times that people say, Camera members never come into my pub. And so how on earth could you know?
Hmm.
Yeah, most Camera members just look like normal people. They look like you and I. And they behave perfectly reasonably. And it's just that very, very small percentage of people who behave badly, which affects the rest of them. And the fact that we have so small numbers, and we take every one of them very seriously, and it causes us a lot of heartache, and we have to work very hard to try to repair the damage. But the fact that it is a small number that are noticed and make it to social media shows actually the vast majority of Camera members are doing the right thing, and they're doing a good job for us.
So I guess the best way to fix those small numbers would be probably more diversity within Camera, not necessarily age, but genders, class, and obviously more minorities wherever it's sort of possible. Is there Is there anything sort of physically written by Camera to try and promote that, or are there processes in place to encourage diversity?
Yeah, it's easy to write things. So having said that, we do have values that are written down. We have a code of conduct, which includes measures to ensure that people are not discriminated against in any way. We have a volunteer's charter, which again is saying if you're a volunteer at Camera, you should be expected to be treated in certain ways, and that should involve discrimination at all. And of course, in terms of the recruitment of members, we would like to present a campaign which looks diverse and inclusive.
So that's stopping you pushing people away. How are you bringing them in?
Well, that's the tricky thing, because we can stop, or we can try to stop people from being pushed away, as you say, but it's actually how do you attract them in. I think the best way is to try to present an organisation which looks like them. So we're getting there. I would never say we're getting there and we've solved the problem, but we've got to show that actually, we have members who look like you, that it's not all a certain type of person.
Yeah, and share your beliefs and your common histories.
Share your beliefs. And that's why it's so important that we do take every incident seriously of any form of discrimination by a member, because that the message that sends out is we're not welcoming to people for whatever reason. And there are great examples out there of Camera branches and festivals doing this very, very well. And what we've got to do more of is making sure that spread and that best practice is adopted by the branches. You know, Manchester's an example I use a lot. It's a really good example of a festival that is doing some very good things in terms of just showing a welcoming face and saying we're inclusive, we're diverse, we're not going to be doing anything which is going to make you feel unwelcome here. And it's not something you can do overnight, but if every branch and every festival we run was taking on board those sort of ideas, that would go a long way towards solving, the issue of making sure we're getting in more people from all walks of life.
So without implying that you guys are doing it wrong, what do you think some of the sort of the more keg-based, more craft-tilted brewery festivals are doing? Because I know that I think it was LCBF, London Craft Beer Festival, managed at nearly, I think it was just shy of 40% of the people through the doors were female. What's the difference?
That's a really good question. And it's not a case of doing it wrong or not. It's about what you can learn from other people. Mm-hmm. It may be the way that they are able to market. It may be the beers they have on offer. I think if you look at, let's call them the new generation of drinkers, I think we're getting, thankfully, more women involved in drinking beer, but I think they've been drawn in by the way that craft beer has been marketed in a very less traditional way, thankfully in a less sexist way. I think it's no secret that some beers have been marketed in ways that are actually actively off-putting to female drinkers. And there have been attitudes in the beer industry that still exist today that are off-putting to female drinks as well, in terms of pint glasses and the way they're served, and the way it's assumed if you're a female drinker, you want a half. There's all sorts of stuff that's still going on, and you don't have to look far to find the reasons why women are put off drinking beer and going to some pubs. We, say, Great British Beer Festival, get 40, 50,000 people through the door from a massive wide range of demographics, which means our marketing can't be quite as targeted, I suggest, as other festivals that are much smaller. And equally, our beer range has to be wider to match a lot of different tastes. I would say this because we run GBBF and we don't run a small independent festival. In some cases, it can be easier as a smaller festival to target that niche and be very successful in that niche. And again, sometimes it's perception. I think sometimes people come along to Camera events and they want to see something and that's what they see. It's easy if you're wandering around Great British Beer Festival, if you want to see someone who fits your stereotypical Camera member image, you can find them. Again, they may not even be a member. They might just be somebody wandering through. I've certainly been at Great British Beer Festival at certain times of day where it seems to be absolutely packed with young people and a higher proportion of women than at other sessions, especially in the evenings. So it's difficult to tell. There is a lot more we can do, and we're not going to be complacent about it. We're not going to say, we attract some women, so that's fine. But I think sometimes there can be an assumption that we are failing too when other people are not. but I suspect some of that might be geared up by people who already have an idea of what they're expecting to see when they walk through the doors of those two different places.
Yeah, so they're seeing it through a lens, maybe. And another criticism that is leveled at Cameron on that note is the fact that it never changes. So you've been there for 12 years. Obviously, you're biased, but how much has it changed in 12 years from your perspective?
Massively. My beard is greyer. it has. I think the thing is, as I said earlier, camera tends to evolve rather than have a revolution. So it might not seem that we change massively quickly, but actually things have. For example, you can go to quite a lot of camera festivals now and there will be keg walls, certain key keg there. I think if you compare the way we talk about different beers from when I first started to now, I think you'd actually realise there's quite a marked change. I think if you look at the way we campaign, there'd be a way that we've changed in the way we campaign. So I dispute the fact there's changes. I don't think it's something that just, again, overnight, suddenly you snap your fingers and we're doing something a completely different way. I don't think that works with an organisation as large as ours. Mm. We have to take our membership with us because they're the guys who do the hard work. We support them, but we can't do everything they do. And I think some of the critics of camera can be very quick to say, you should do this, but that's because they're not the ones responsible for convincing those people who are active in our branches, running our festivals, running our branches, to actually do the thing. And it's easy to say, this is what you should do and you should do it tomorrow, but you've actually got to win over a lot of people and convince them this is the right thing to do. So yes, we have changed. Yes, we will continue to change. We're not going to change as fast as some people would like. And we may change faster than other people would like. But,
yeah. Forever sort of caught in the middle is camera. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so the final question off the back of that is, you know, you are the biggest consumer campaign in the world, I think. But obviously the biggest audience are the people that aren't members of camera.
Yeah.
So I'd love to know from your perspective what beer lovers, whether they love Cask or don't get it, whether they love camera or hate them, what can people do to support the cause? Because I think there's nobody in the UK that wants Cask beer to die, but yeah. There's so many different views about what death would look like or what
I think
revitalization would look like.
For the non-camera member, it's about educate yourself about what cask beer is. So if you don't know, find out what makes it different from the other things you're drinking. Try it. I'm not saying you have to like it, of course, but if you know what it is and you know what the differences are and you know why that's different from maybe another type of beer you're drinking, you've learned something, and you might discover why a lot of people, our membership, feel that there is something special about that as a style of beer, and why, if it completely disappeared and brewers stopped brewing it completely, why that would be a very sad thing. Like any style of beer disappearing completely, because it reduces choice, it reduces the diversity of beers out there, it reduces that incredible exploration you can do in the beer world, the surprise that beer can still give you, where you order a pint of something in a pub and you just drink it, and that first mouth you think, wow, that actually is something which is special and that's worth the money I paid for it. And I couldn't guarantee I was going to get that when I walked into the pub. And it's out of the ordinary. Because if you're not doing that exploration, you're just going to be happy with chain restaurants across the country, because you know you'll get a guaranteed level of quality. And the quality will not be great, but it's not going to be terrible. And I think the beer world is about that. It's about not just settling for a bland level of quality across things. It's about saying, we want to be surprised. We want to find something special. We want to be able to discover and explore ourselves.
Yeah, which is, I guess, where camera kind of started. It was in a pub in Ireland, I think, looking at the wasteland of macro lagers that had come ashore and kegged bitters and going, well, it's all fine, but it's bland, and we miss the excitement.
And it may not have even been bland. And again, it's subjective, isn't it? But it was just, I think, yeah, they surveyed what they saw as this, apocalyptic landscape of just two or three brands in every pub.
Mm.
And I don't think they even claimed that they were terrible. It's just they were all the same. And they were of a quality, because obviously they're brewed by big companies who know what they're doing. But there was no surprises left. There was no finding that gem of a beer. There's nothing left to explore or discover. And I think that's what worried them more than anything. And I've talked to the Four Founders of Camera. It's great because you get people having arguments about why Camera was founded. And sometimes they have arguments about why Camera was founded in a room where one of the Camera founders is sitting. And it's not like the founders of America where they're dead and you can't really ask him. You said he's there. You can ask him why he founded Camera. He's sitting right next. If you talk to them, they will say, we did it for choice. It wasn't that we wanted to stop people drinking other things. It wasn't that we said everyone should be drinking real ale. It was that we were walking into pubs and discovering that our favoured choice was no longer available. And so we found Camera because we wanted to still have that choice, in the same way that someone should have a choice having a red wine. And if suddenly red wine disappeared off the shelf of pubs, that would be concerning. So that was it. It was choice, discovery, interest, surprise, just not having the same three things every time you walked into a pub.
Thanks for listening this week, folks. This is GBH's founder, Michael Kaiser. If you find value in the content that GBH produces, we'd love to hear it. Rate the podcast, tweet at us, send us an email, share it with a friend, whatever makes sense for you. That feedback goes a long way and helps others find us too. And if you're feeling generous, we started a subscription club for GBH readers called The Fervent Few, where you can contribute financially to the content you love and get access to exclusive gear, our community forum, and we invite you to share your experiences and opinions on a weekly topic. It's been a great way to bring our readers together with our writers for some compelling discussion, and you should join. If you'd like to support GBH, visit goodbeerhunting.com/ferventfew or click on the link in our show notes. Our music is produced by Andrew Thibodeau, and our sound engineer is Jordan Stalling of Particle Audio. Aim true, poor liberal folks. Have a great week.